The road north from Dakar is a long, flat ribbon of tarmac that runs beside the ocean for a while, and then just decides it's had enough of the sea and turns inland to follow the railway line instead. I got a Sept Place shared taxi from the Pompiers Garrotier, squeezed in the back between a woman with a basket of enormous, glistening fish and a young man who spent the whole journey listening to Mbalax on his phone without earphones. It was about 270 kilometers, and it took us nearly 4 hours, the driver weaving through the afternoon heat while the radio crackled with news about the Pambal demonstration they're planning for the weekend, something about land compensation along the new motorway corridor. The landscape changed slowly. The dense, chaotic suburbs of the capital gave way to dusty towns and stretches of scrubland dotted with baobabs, their massive trunks looking like ancient, patient deities. Then, without any real warning, the road rose and there it was, the wide, brown Senegal River, running high and fast after all the rain. And there, on the other side of the water, was St. Louis. But you don't cross to the mainland part first. The taxi dropped us on the mainland side, in the district they call Sor, and I walked the rest of the way, over the steel lattice of the Pont Faidherbe. It's a beautiful old thing, designed by a student of Gustave Eiffel's, painted a rust red, and looking like it was shipped in pieces from France in 1897. And as I walked, the whole island of St. Louis unfolded in front of me, a strip of old colonial buildings, balconies, and rusted roofs, floating there in the middle of the river. Crossing that bridge is an event. Below you, the water is churning, the color of milky tea, and all around there are pirogues, the long, painted fishing boats, zipping back and forth. Gulls are screaming, and the air smells of river water and fish and something green, something growing. It was humid, over 30 degrees, and the sky was a heavy, overcast blanket. But the light, even under the clouds, had a particular quality to it. The whitewashed facades of the old island were almost glowing. I stood there for a while, just leaning on the railing and watching the river carry its load of sediment out to the Atlantic. It felt like arriving at the end of a journey, even though I know this is just the beginning. On the island itself, the street names change and the pace of life drops. There are caleches, the horse-drawn carriages, clattering over the cobbles, their drivers calling out for passengers. It's one of the most pleasant ways to see the place, apparently, though I preferred to walk, to get the feel of it under my feet. The main square is Place Faidherbe, with a statue of the old governor on a plinth, but the area around it is more than just a colonial memorial. There's the Cathedral de St. Louis, a pure white neoclassical building from 1828, which is said to be one of the oldest still working churches in West Africa. And right next door, the Grande Mosquée de St. Louis, with its distinctive Maghreb-style minaret, a constant reminder of the deep history of this place. My guest house is in the Lodo Quarter, the northern, Muslim part of the island. It's a tall, narrow building with a wonderful inner courtyard full of plants and a lazy cat. The room is simple, with a ceiling fan and a view over the rooftops, and the price was on the lower end of what I expected, about 17,000 francs a night for a double. It's called Hotel Cahoris, and it feels genuinely Senegalese, not like the fancier tourist places down by the river. I dumped my bag and immediately went out to explore the lanes. The island is small, maybe a 30-minute walk end to end, and the lanes are narrow, with crumbling walls and brightly painted doors. There's a real energy here, a sense of life lived close together. I was hungry, so I stopped at a small, local eatery on the Rue Le Blanc de Rolfs, a hole-in-the-wall place that serves a plat du jour. Today it was a bowl of thigh bedayen, the national dish, which I have become thoroughly spoiled on in the last week. This version had a piece of grouper, some carrots, cassava, and the rice was perfectly soaked with that tomatoey, slightly smoky sauce. It cost me about 2,000 francs, a little over $3, and it was possibly the best one yet. The old woman who served me smiled when I tried to say Ningadef, and she corrected my pronunciation gently. This is how I learn. In the late afternoon, when the heat started to loosen its grip, I walked over the small bridge at the north end of the island and onto the Long de Barbary, the long, thin sand spit that separates the river from the Atlantic. This is where Get NDAR is the beating heart of St. Louis. It's a completely different world from the quiet colonial island. A dense, frantic quarter of fish docks, boats, drying fish on racks, and a million people going about their business. The smell is powerful, a mix of sea, smoke, and fish guts. This is one of West Africa's most important fishing ports, and you can feel it. I watched the pirogues come in, their hulls laden with silver, and the women rushing to buy the catches, their brightly colored baboos a stark contrast to the gray, wet world around them. The energy was intense, but not hostile. There are persistent hustlers here, trying to get you to take their pirogue on a river trip or to buy a carved wooden boat, but a firm no thanks and a bit of a stride in my step sorted them out. The real story in Get NDAR, though, is the water. The shore is actively collapsing into the sea. The Atlantic is chewing away at the spit, year on year, and you can see the evidence in abandoned buildings leaning at odd angles, half devoured by the waves. Locals have been talking about it for years, but it feels very immediate and very urgent when you're standing right there. After Get NDAR, I walked back through the town to the Hydro Base District, which is a newer mainland quarter. A group of university students from Gaston Berger were handing out flyers, a campaign they're running against plastic pollution. They told me they had done a caravan through nearby villages, which had been received and blessed by a village chief, which they said was a good omen. It made me think of the news from the university, the student protests that have been going on all year. I'm told a young man died in the unrest, and it's clearly still a raw and sensitive subject, something people speak about quietly, not loudly. The official end of the academic year is this month, and there's a real chance the whole year will be invalidated, which is a tense situation for thousands of students. As the evening drew in, I went for a walk along the riverside quays, watching the sun set over the water. The sky was heavy with clouds, the promise of another hibernage storm later tonight. I stopped at the farmer's coffee shop for a strong espresso and a look at my map. It's a popular spot with a great view over the river, and the coffee was a welcome taste of routine. I felt a real sense of peace, a sense of having made a good decision to come here. The crowds of the summer are gone, and the city feels like it belongs to the people who live here, to the fishermen and the students and the old ladies in the courtyards. A pirogue glided past, its single lamp burning in the twilight, and I thought about the Jauge National Bird Park, 60 kilometers north. They say it's home to millions of migratory birds, but from November to April. Now, in the rainy season, it's still worth a visit, but the birds aren't there in the same numbers. I think I'll save that for later in the year, for a different episode entirely. Dinner was at a local spot called Lalinger, which I'd read served a good yassapule. It did not disappoint. The chicken was marinated in lemon and mustard, and the onions were cooked down to a sweet, caramelized mess, all served over rice with a little bit of heat. A generous plate for about 3,000 francs, around $5. I was the only tubab in the place, which is always a good sign. I ate slowly, listening to the buzz of conversation around me, catching a few words here and there in Wolof, feeling a small sense of accomplishment at understanding more than I did a week ago. On the way back to the hotel, the wind picked up and the first few heavy drops of rain started to fall. I took shelter under the awning of a closed shop with a couple of other people, and we watched the storm roll and over the river. The rain came down in sheets, and the dusty streets turned to rivers in minutes. The temperature dropped, and the smell of the wet earth filled the air. My companions laughed and spoke to me, but the rain was so loud I could barely hear them. We just stood there, sharing the moment, and I felt a warmth that had nothing to do with the temperature. Taraná, they call it, this generosity of spirit, and I felt it again. When the rain eased to a steady drizzle, I said goodbye and walked the final few blocks back to the Cahoras. The storm had washed the island clean, and the street lights reflected in the puddles. I climbed the stairs to my room, the fan stirring the humid air, and I could still hear the thunder grumbling out at sea. I opened the window and listened to the sound of the river and the rain and the city winding down for the night. Tomorrow, I'll explore the old train station in Soar and the Notre Dame de Lourdes Grotto, and I'll get to work on making this place, for a little while at least, my home. Because that's the thing about this journey. It's not just about passing through. It's about the slow layering of experience, the daily routine of a new place, the price of a baguette, the name of a street, the smell of the river after storm. It's the feeling of getting a key that opens a door to a room that's not a hotel room. I feel it tonight here in St. Louis. I'm one step closer to home. Good night from a quiet room on the island, with the river running high outside my window.